Rashi comments on the first verse in this week's Sedra, Eila Hadvarim, Asher Dimer Moshe Kol Yisrael, Be'eva Yarden, Amidbar, Ba'arova, Mol Suf, Bein Paron, Uvein Tofa, V'lovon, V'chatzeros, V'dizahav. Eila Hadvarim, Rashi says, these are words of Musar, Tochacha, that Moshe Rabbeinu waited to give the Jewish people right before he died, and he made business to speak to everybody, so nobody could say, if I was there, I would have had something to say. And he hinted to them all the places where they sinned, and out of honor to Klal Yisrael, in order not to specify in detail all these places and all the sins, so he hinted to them the sins. And what were these sins? Bamidbar, all the sins they did in saying that the Rabbanu Shel Olam Milshach Shichsu Bamidbar, Mitein Musenu Bamidbar, they complained many times, we're going to die in this desert, right? We have no water, we have no food, and so on. Ba'arava, that was what happened in by Baal Peor, right, that they were immoral with the daughters of Midian. Mol Suf, before they went into the Yam Suf, they complained, they were afraid, right, let's go back to Egypt. And after they came out of the Yam Suf, they also, complained that they, who said that the Egyptians aren't coming out another side. Bein Paron, Paron was the Chet HaMeraglim. Tofel V'Lavan is how they complained about the Mon, right, that they're tired of the Mon, they want meat. And the Chatzeros was the Machlokas of Korach, and Dizahav was the Golden Calf. So, a few problems here. First of all, the order is completely out of order. There's no order here. It's not from later to earlier, earlier to later. It's all mixed up. So I think the Maral says that was part of the hint. Had Moshe Rabbeinu said it in chronological order, right, then it would have been obvious what he was referring to. So to mask it and to make it more of a hint alone, for the covet of Klal Yisrael, he put it out of order too, so it wasn't obvious that these were all the places that he sinned. That's, I have another shot in that, but it's not really relevant to what we're going to talk about now. So we'll leave it with that. The problem, though, is the following. That Moshe Rabbeinu, from the next parak on, and the next three parshios, goes into great detail in every one of these sins. He speaks about great detail in a few sentences later about the sin of the spies, goes into in detail again later on. He speaks about the sin of the golden calf in great detail, right? And all the other sins he mentions in detail. So if he didn't want to mention them out of honor to Klal Yisrael, out of deference to their honor, then why did he mention later? What was the difference now and then? So I was thinking to explain it in the following way. And another thing is, what's the big mussar over here? The people he was talking to were the next generation. They weren't even involved in most of these sins. They were children at the time. So what is the idea of deference to the honor of the Jewish people? You want to rebuke them openly. These people weren't the people getting rebuked. The people who were getting rebuked are dead, most of them. And these people were not only not 20, but they probably weren't even bar mitzvah in the time when these sins were done. So all these sins were 40 years earlier. So and anybody who was over 60 was no longer alive. So we're talking about people who probably weren't even bar mitzvah. So what's the great rebuke? Why do you rebuke people who didn't do the sins? The Haftorah starts, Bonim Gidalti V'Romamti V'Heim Poshu Bi. The Rabbanu Shlom's major complaint against the Jewish people is two things. He got Gidalti. I raised these people up. The Rabbanu Shel Olam made us into a nation, and he raised us like a parent raises a child. V'Romamti, and he made us great. And we ignored both of those things and rebelled against him. And that's what it continues. Yod Ashor Konehu. Ashor knows who owns it, and the shore gets importance because it serves a purpose for its master. So it gives it purpose. The chamor evus ba'alav, the chamor doesn't have any great standing, but at least the chamor knows who feeds it. Yisrael lo yada, Klal Yisrael didn't know, Yisrael, higher level, didn't know what their standing was, right, like the shore, and what's it called, ami, my nation, lo hishbonon. They never thought into it, right, they didn't know what an animal knows. The animal knows who feeds it, and the animal knows its purpose. And Klal Yisrael didn't know their purpose, and they didn't know who feeds them. Meaning the following. What should keep a person from sinning and give him the incentive to do the Rabbanu Shlom's will is two things. One is Hakaras HaTov, that he should recognize the fact that his entire existence is because of the Rabbanu Shlom. Right, everything that he has, including the basis of his life, comes from the Rabbanu Shalom. That's the idea of Gidalti. The Rabbanu Shalom raised us. He gave us our life, he gave us our existence, everything, every detail of our life comes from the Rabbanu Shalom. So Hakaras HaTov is simple gratitude. Right? Everything you are, everything you have, comes from the Rabbanu Shalom, B'makir Tova. Recognize the good. But it's more than that. Veromanti, the Rabbanu Shalom gave us, Klal Yisrael, a tremendous standing in this world. We have a tremendous mission, tremendous potential, and we have a tremendous amount of greatness that the Rabbanu Shalom gave us in the scheme of things, the universal scheme of things. We play a very important part. The Rabbanu Shalom gave us a very important part. That's Veromamti. I extolled you. I raised you up. So that's also Hakaras HaTov. Hakaras HaTov from two sides. One, to recognize the good that God does for us on a constant basis. And the second is to recognize the good that we are capable of doing. Right? The good that the Rabbanu Shalom did for us in giving us the standing that we have, in giving us the greatness that we have, giving us the responsibility, yes, but the tremendous opportunity to fulfill a very important mission in the universal, eternal scheme of things. That's the Romanti. And that's also recognizing the good that we possess, not just the good that we receive from the Rabbanu Shalom, but the good that we possess and the tremendous opportunity and merit that we have. That's also part of recognizing the good. And therefore, all of the history of Klal Yisrael, the ups and the downs, depend on when we recognize both those things, and then we remain true to the responsibility the Rabbanu Shalom gave us. We recognize the debt of gratitude we have to the Rabbanu Shalom, and we recognize the tremendous mission that we have. When we recognize both of them very, very strongly, then we're people who are fulfilling our purpose. And it will deter us from doing anything against God's will, give us the incentive to fulfill our purpose in this world and to do God's will. When either of those points is weakened, we don't recognize the good that God does for us, and we don't recognize the good that we possess, the merit we possess, the tremendous standing we have, then commensurate to how much we don't realize that, that's how much we don't fulfill our purpose, and that we are able to be ungrateful to the Rabbanu Shalom and not do what he wants us to do either. So that, I think, is hinted to in another Medrash. The Medrash says three people saw Klal Yisrael at different periods in history, and they all said the same word, Eicha. How? Moshe Rabbeinu, in this week's Sedra, saw Klal Yisrael Bigadlusam, right, in their greatness. And he said, Eicho eso levadi torchachem masachem veritchem. How can I possibly carry alone all of your troubles or whatever? You're very important people, and I'm not up to being able to take the responsibility for you. He said, Eicha. Yirmiyahu Hanavi, Yishayahu Hanavi saw them b'pachzusa. He saw them in their sin. And he said, Eicha hoysa l'zolna kiryo nemona. How could you have turned to be like a harlot? That city that was once very faithful. And Yirmiyahu saw them b'nivlusan. Yirmiyahu saw them in their degradation after the destruction. And he said, Eicha yashva vadad. What's the meaning of this idea? The word Eicha means how, but it has the idea of Eichus, of what is the essence of this people. Moshe Rabbeinu saw what the potential we had, tremendous godless, but according, commensurate to the greatness that we have and the close relationship we have with God, if we recognize that and we take it to heart, then we have tremendous greatness. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu saw. But he saw in that also the potential that if we ignore either of those things, it's going to lead us to sin, and the sin is going to lead us to be degraded, because the greater the potential, the greater you are, the harder you fall. Right? If you fall out of a basement window, there's not too much damage you're going to do. But if you fall off the Empire State Building, right, it causes a lot of damage. So the greater the person, the greater the degradation, the greater the chance for the sin. Right? If we don't recognize who we are, what we owe the Ribbono Shel Olam, what our responsibility is, what our merit is, then the chances for us to sin become greater, and the chances for us to fall become even greater. So each one saw at a different point, but they all saw the same thing. They just saw it from different perspectives. It's the same exact point. We have a tremendously close relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we have to have a tremendous amount of Hakaras HaTov for what He does for us. At the same time, the Ribbono Shel Olam built us up and gave us tremendous potential. And if we don't recognize that potential and we sell ourselves short, then we're going to end up degrading ourselves too. So it is specifically what Moshe saw, what led to the sins of what Yishayahu saw, and led to the degradation that Yirmiyahu saw. It's not different things. It's the same potential we have, but potential can be used for the good, or Rahman al-Salam can be abused and used for the bad. And that's Klal Yisrael. That's the Jewish people. That's what we are. Right? We have tremendous possibility for good, tremendous possibility for the bad. And that's the Musar that Moshe was giving. He wasn't giving for the specific sins. That he did later. And that had nothing to do with these people. He's just reminding us of Jewish history that we should learn from those sins. But here he was telling us, I'm not going to tell you the sins themselves. We're not going to go into detail. We're going to go into the causes behind the sins, the roots of the sin, which still apply to you. How much does it apply to you? And sometimes by looking how it applies to other people, you see it more clearly by yourself. The Baal Shem Tov says that sometimes a person does something wrong, but a person never sees his own shortcomings. You always distort things. You're nogeya b'davar. You're biased when it comes to yourself. So you love yourself. Al kol pshoyim techasa ava. And therefore you don't see any of your own faults. Because kol mumim adam roeh chutz mimumei atzmo. A person sees all different kinds of blemishes except his own. So the Baal Shem Tov says that therefore, sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam therefore brings something before a person that he sees somebody else do something, the exact same thing he did. But now he's seeing it, somebody else did it. Now he sees it in an objective way. And he, in his mind, comes to a judgment about that other person. And whatever judgment he comes about the other person, what goes on him. Because now you're able to try yourself. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam is showing you a situation that you don't realize is you. But it's you that you can judge objectively. And you're the one then who in your mind decides what the verdict is on that, on what you did, but now you're seeing somebody else do it. Could be that's the reason why whenever we say vidui, we include our parents. Aval anachnu va'avoseinu chatanu. Isn't that an affront, an insult to our parents? We send our parents, and leave parents alone. They have enough troubles on their own. You have to confess to your parents' sins. Anachnu v'avoseinu chatan. Was thinking that it says in Eicha, avoseinu chatu ve'enam, our forefathers sinned, and they're no longer here. V'anachnu avonoseihem savolnu. Simple meaning, and we're suffering for their sins. But there's another meaning. Savalnu means, and we patiently bear their sins. Meaning, they sin, they're no longer here. But we have the same problem, and we are able to be sovel. We're able to, what's a good word for sovel? Not to suffer, to endure. Yeah, okay. Right? We can live with it. That's the problem. It didn't change. When children are oches maaseh avoseihem biyodeihem, they hold on to the sins, not that they do the same sin, but they what's it called, have the same roots. It's still there. It hasn't changed. You can sometimes see from the parents more how it applies to you than looking directly at yourself, because then you can see it more objectively. So we always include what was the generation before, because if we haven't totally uprooted it, then we're basically holding on to those same roots. Not maybe not the same way, may not be the exact same sin, but it all comes from the same roots. What are those roots? Those roots are manifestations of these two things. Either we don't appreciate what the Rabbanu Shalom gives us on an ongoing basis, how much we are like the donkey who doesn't know who's feeding us, or like the shore who doesn't know what our standing is. And based on how much we don't appreciate either one of those things or both of them, that's how far we end up doing these sins. And that's exactly what these sins represent. Right? We started by Midbar. By Midbar is God took care of your needs for 40 years in the desert. And you didn't appreciate it. Right? You complained. Instead of appreciating the fact that for 40 years your basic needs were taken care of in an exemplary way, every little chance you had to complain, you complain. So that's the first foundation. You're worse than a donkey. A donkey knows who feeds him. You don't even know that. And then Ba'arava. That was Baal Peor. That's the other extreme. You didn't appreciate who you are. And you degraded yourself by falling into immorality with the daughters of Midian. Is that befitting the stature that the Rabbanu Shalom gave you? So those are the two major points, like it says in Shabbos Chazon. Bonim gidalti v'romamti v'heim pashubi. Bamidbar, you don't appreciate the ongoing chesed that the Rabbanu Shalom does. He has a special close relationship with you. And not only that, he gave you tremendous standing. You have tremendous potential. And you don't realize that either, and you degrade yourself to fall into the immorality with Benos Midyon, Baal Peor. What an insulting lowering of your stature. Those are the two things. And then, Mosuf. It manifested itself also when you needed the Rabbanu Shalom the most, and you were in danger, and you cried out to him. Instead of appreciating the fact that God just took you out of Egypt, he's there for you, you had doubts, let's go back to Egypt. That was before. That was the concept of not appreciating that God's there for you. And after Yam Suf, you saw these miracles. You saw how the Rabbanu Shalom picked you up, mamish. And you said, well, maybe the Egyptians are also coming out. You didn't realize who you are and what the Rabbanu Shalom did for you. And then Paran is the Shechet HaMeraglim. Both things again. On the one hand, the Rabbanu Shalom wants to give you a present Eretz Yisrael where you can fulfill your tremendous mission, right? And he's willing to help you with it or whatever. And you don't recognize the fact that the Rabbanu Shalom is there for you again, and you're not interested in the present. You're not interested in the mission. You're not interested in the greatness you're going to have in occupying Eretz Yisrael. That's Parah. And then Tofel V'Lava. You complain about the Mon. Right? On the one hand, you don't appreciate. The Mon is the food of angels. God feeding you like he feeds angels. You don't realize what kind of angel you are. And you don't realize that the Rabbanu Shalom is the one who's providing for you. That's the Mon. And then finally, the Chatzeros is the Machlokas of Korach, right, where Korach didn't appreciate also the mission that the Rabbanu Shalom gives. He felt every man for himself, get it for yourself. Right? It's not that God apportions out missions for people and appreciate the mission that was given to you. No. Not given, it's taken. And finally, Dizahav, it all stems from the fact that the Rabban Hashem gives you a tremendous amount of gold. Right? The purpose of that gold is to build a Mishkan. And the Rabban Hashem takes care of all your needs, luxury-wise. Gold. And the gold is to raise your stature to build a Mishkan. And you take it and build a golden calf. So you are ungrateful, and you also degrade yourself. That's your level. You could have God's presence amongst you, and you settle for a golden calf. So every single one of these things is not so much the sin, but what it represents. These two ideas. And Moshe said, if the same thing applies to you, you haven't purged yourself of these chesronos. You have potential with the eicha for greatness or the eicha for degradation. It's up to you. So out of deference and covet to Klal Yisrael, he said it in a hint. Later on, when he went through the sins that the parents did, it's not okay to them. The actual sin, it's not us, somebody else did it. No covet for us if you don't mention it. Not at all, but we'll learn from it. We'll learn from their sin. But over here, Moshe's not teaching them to learn from the parents' sin. He's telling, look at the parents, what they had, and look at yourself, you have the same, the roots are still there. And you can use them either for the good, or you can use them for the bad. And it's covered for Christ, so he only hinted to them. You think about it. I'm not going to tell it openly to you. That was the Musa. And that's all Tzomos, all Tanios, are this idea that we're fasting for past sins that our forefathers committed, led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but the Rambam says, but we still have those roots of those sins by us. It may manifest itself other ways, but it's the same thing. And therefore the whole purpose of the fast is to do tshuva, not do tshuva for what they did, but any generation where the Beis HaMikdash wasn't built, it's as if it was destroyed. Because if the root of why it was destroyed would be corrected, it'd be built. If it's not built, it's a sign that the roots haven't been corrected, that it's just been continued on. So we are continuing those same sins, maybe in a different way, but it's the same root, it's the same basis. And the Mela, what's it called, that's the whole idea of a fast day for tshuva. Okay, something to think about. Okay, now I want to speak about Tisha B'Av. Give you a little bit of a different perspective maybe on what Tisha B'Av is all about. The Mabit in Beis Elokim, Mabit is Moshe ben Yosef Mitrani. He wrote a sefer called Beis Elokim. And he lived in about, I think, the 1500s. And he says the following, which seems to be very simple idea, but I want to say that it's much deeper than what it seems on the surface. He says that God is a very merciful God, and he doesn't want us to suffer, and therefore there's only one full day, fast day in the year from the Torah, Yom Kippur. And if it had not been for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there would only be one fast day. But since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so we need another fast day for the, what?
And another.
What? No, there's no full fast days. The other ones are only half days. Right? But because of the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, there's another full day fast day, just like Yom Kippur, with all the five Inuyim during the year. Okay. So the simple idea is that from the Torah, one day would have been enough for Kaporas Avonos, but since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the rabbis decided that we need another one to correspond to the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and that's it. I think the idea is much deeper than that, and that's the following. How does Yom Kippur work? Okay, Yom Kippur, we fast, right? It would seem, and from the Lashon HaTorah, that it seems like it's an inui, it's affliction, right? We're afflicting ourselves. Yom Kippur is a very, at least, uncomfortable day, sad day, or whatever. It's not true. The Gemara says, Mishnah says, L'hoi yomim tovim Yisrael kechamishasar ba'avik yom ha-kippurim. There were no greater yomim tovim than the 15th day of Av and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is yom slicho mechila, yom shenitnu bo lucho shnios. We re-receive the Torah on Yom Kippur. It's a day of slicho mechila. What could be happier? person has a chance to cleanse himself of all of his averas. I always like to give the example, right? If for some reason there was no water available for a year, and you couldn't shower, bathe, wash even, and you collected grime and grease, and you were filthy, dirty, and you couldn't clean off, and all of a sudden water became available, you could take a shower, take a bath. It was an exhilarating feeling, right? You'd feel great, right? That's why people sing in the shower, right? It's a very nice feeling to get clean. So Yom Kippur is mamish, that 1 year, 1 day a year shower that you can cleanse yourself of all these averas. You feel great. So Yom Kippur is a very, very happy day. It's a day, so how does it work to give us the incentive to want to do tshuva, and not just to do tshuva on Yom Kippur, but keep that level as much as possible the rest of the year? So I always like to say it's like a day in Gan Eden, a day in Olam Haba. What does the Rabbanim describe Olam Haba? Olam Haba is Ein Lo Achila, Ein Lo Boshtia. There's no eating, there's no drinking. People stand like angels. Some people have the meaning to stand the whole Yom Kippur. And we dress in white like angels. Everybody is friendly with everybody has Mechila, and everybody's friendly on Yom Kippur. It's a very nice feeling. This is a very fine, perfect world. I'm clean from sin, friendly with everybody. I stand like an angel dressed in white, right? I have this tremendous relationship with HaKadosh. A very spiritual day. If you really appreciate what it's all about, you're not thinking about your stomach, and that's why there's a mitzvah to eat Erev Yom Kippur, so you shouldn't be thinking about your stomach the whole time. You should be on this tremendously high spiritual level, and it shouldn't bother you that much. It's not supposed to bother you on Yom Kippur. You're supposed to be able to now concentrate on this tremendous spiritual day and feel like you're in Gan Eden. Now, it's a very nice feeling. So I want to keep that feeling. So if I see how terrible sin is and how beautiful a world is without it, I want to keep myself sin-free as much as I can. That's the incentive. So Yom Kippur is like a day in Olam Haba, a day in Gan Eden. And when the Beis HaMikdash was around, it had that effect that it gave Yom Kippur, you had to bring the sacrifices, and the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It permeated the whole atmosphere all over the world, right? And Jews were uplifted, and the day itself had such Kedusha because of everything that was going on in the Beis HaMikdash that you actually felt like you were in Olam Haba. But once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it doesn't have that effect. The Korbanos aren't there, there's no Kohen Gadol, it's a shadow of what Yom Kippur really is. And I'll give you an example of what that means. It says in the Mishnah that they never made a full day fast day on Sunday because it was dangerous. It was life-threatening to go from the height of Onig on Shabbos to a full day fast day. L'chora, when Tisha B'Av falls, Yom Kippur can't fall like that, according to the way we have the calendar. But when Tisha B'Av a lot of times falls, either on Shabbos and we push it to Sunday or on Sunday. And we go right away from Shabbos into the fast. And we don't say it's Pikuach Nefesh. We fast. What's the big deal? The answer is Tisha B'Av is only after the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. When it was the Beis HaMikdash, Shabbos was so intense that going from a Shabbos like that to a fast was dangerous. The contrast was life-threatening. But after the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, Shabbos has lost its intensity. So from going to Shabbos like this, to fasting, it's no big deal. That you can do. So what happens, you know, if you're in bright light and you're dazzled by it, okay? But if you're in dim light, it doesn't dazzle you. What happened to Yom Kippur is, Yom Kippur, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, was bright light, dazzled us. Gave us the feeling of being in Gan Eden. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the lights dimmed. Now you come to Yom Kippur, big deal. It's dim light. So if you can't make the lights shine brighter because the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, how do you get dazzled by dim light? So what you do is you go into a cellar, pitch black, stay there for a while, and then come out into the dim light. And then the dim light dazzles you because the contrast between the darkness and the dim light, now the dim light becomes dazzling. Therefore, as long as there was a Beis HaMikdash, Yom Kippur could dazzle us with its intensity and give us a feeling that we were in Gan Eden. But But once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it doesn't have that power. So we need something to contrast Yom Kippur, another day in the year, but a different kind of day. Yom Kippur, in addition to not washing and not being involved in the physical things and not eating and not drinking and being in a spiritual world, on Tisha B'Av you don't learn Torah and you don't say Shalom. It's also a day out of this world, but it's a day in Gehenna. One day you feel like you're in Gehenna. Once you experience Gehenna on Tisha B'Av, the contrast then when Yom Kippur comes is going from the darkness into the dim light that can still dazzle you. That's what it means. Yom Kippur was enough till the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, in order for Yom Kippur to really have the effect that it had before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, you need another day to contrast it with a day in Gehenna. So Tisha B'Av is a day in Gehenna. But what's the connection? Tisha B'Av is, you know, in Av, and this is in Tishrei. There's a tremendous connection between them. Because there are 21 days between Shivasa B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. Last week we said we build up. 21 is 7 is a unit of time, complete unit, 7 days of creation. So a complete unit of time. One has 7 days of Avela, 7 days of Simcha B'Yachasana, 7 days of Yontif, always represents a unit of time. 3 of those units is a Chazaka. So we go through 3 units of 7 to build up the Tisha B'Av, to really feel when Tisha B'Av comes that we're a day in Gehenna. Without those 3 units of time in preparation, we wouldn't feel anything on Tisha B'Av. But we build up to it like we explained last week. And therefore we go into Tisha B'Av, we go into Gehenna. Then we have another 3 units of time after Tisha B'Av to digest it, to hold on to it. It's very nice to experience something. Miyala Bahar Hashem, it's nice to get up there, but Miyakum, you have to know how to digest it and internalize it. So you need another 3. We prepare for it with 3 units of time, and we digest it and hold on to it 3 units of time. 21 days exactly after Tisha B'Av is Rosh Chodesh Elul. Rosh Chodesh Elul begins a 40-day process that culminates in Yom Kippur. So that Yom Kippur is already the 40-day process that leads up to Yom Kippur, starts 21 days after Tisha B'Av. Once you've internalized the Tisha B'Av, now you can start working on Yom Kippur. And once Yom Kippur comes, you contrast what you feel on Yom Kippur with what you felt on Tisha B'Av, because there's now a whole process that goes from one to the other, and then Yom Kippur can have its effect. That's the idea. So one idea of Tisha B'Av, it's not a day of tshuva. We don't do tshuva on Tisha B'Av. We don't say slichos, we don't say vidui like every other fast day. And the purpose of a fast day usually is tshuva, and here is no tshuva. Tisha B'Av is an auxiliary supplement to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the day we do tshuva. But in order to be able to really do tshuva on Yom Kippur, we need a day of Eivel. That's what we do on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av. We mourn. We feel like we're in Gehenna. We feel how imperfect the world is without a Beis HaMikdash. After we prepared for that for 21 days, we're able to feel something, we're able to internalize it another 21 days, and then we can use it to contrast between that and Yom Kippur, and then Yom Kippur can lead us to tshuva. So it's not the Tisha B'Av itself that we do tshuva on. Tisha B'Av is just to get a feeling of that darkness that then can be contrasted to even the dim light of Yom Kippur, and then Yom Kippur can be effective. We still have time that we can celebrate Tisha B'Av this year. Not out of the question.